Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024 Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Royal Oaks. Next time on Too Many Lawyers, we take on a couple of villains to sort out whether bad stuff is also illegal stuff. George Santos won a seat in Congress by lying to voters, but is that a crime? And Kanye West made it clear he hates Jews. In England, he'd go to jail for that. Here in America, did he commit a hate crime? Listen to Too Many Lawyers on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Brett Mears. Hunt now. Down goes Duffy out cold. Brett Mears does it again. Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Well, that might have been the best fight card that I've ever called. Certainly a recency bias there, but that one felt like a good one last night. Good day to you. Sunday, December 13th, 2020, episode 280 of the Anik and Florian podcast. We are coast to coast today. Ken Flo, it's good to see you, my friend, rocking that Anik and Florian podcast t-shirt, no less. A little under the weather, though, aren't you?
I am. I'm just glad it's not COVID. I've had a couple tests. I was not feeling too hot, but I'm here, and I'm excited to talk about this amazing main event, man, which was just insane.
So because I've taken 60 COVID tests, can I ask you if it was a nasal swab or the throat jobber?
It was the nasal swab. That's the only one I've done.
Yeah.
I think on BattleBots, they were doing the throat swab. But anyways, yeah. I've had a bunch myself. But, it's funny. Like, I'm having all, like, the cold symptoms, and I'm freaking out. I'm like, am I going to get someone sick? But anyways.
Well, you look good. You sound good enough, and we have so much to get into, and it sort of feels like a daunting task today to get to all of these fighters. And I know some of our listeners and viewers will say, well, why don't you go 2 hours? And it's like, well, maybe we will. You know what? Maybe we fucking will today. God, I said I was going to go the whole episode without swearing and then 2 minutes in. So Davison Figueiredo and Brandon Moreno go the distance. It ends up being a majority draw. One judge for Davison Figueiredo. The two other judges had it 47-47. So many different layers to this championship fight. It was epic. I think for me, it might even unseat Zhang Weili versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk for the fight of the year. I guess that's neither here nor there, Ken Flo. Your thoughts on Figueiredo, Moreno, the full 25 minutes, and ultimately how you scored it if you were indeed scoring the fight.
Just ridiculous. Listen, I think that main event really had it all. Not only was it filled with drama and back and forth action. I think it was technical. I think both those guys showed skills everywhere as well, which is also rare in a mixed martial arts fight. And I think both those guys are elite for a reason, and they proved it. And the fact that both of those guys really showed up to the best of their abilities. Obviously, Davison wasn't 100% with being in the hospital, but both of those guys truly showed up and put it all on the line, gave everything they had. And we had an absolute classic because of it. Is it one of the best flyweight fights, or is it the best flyweight fight of all time? Probably. I think both those guys showed skill everywhere, showed heart. They ate some insane shots. Both guys proved that they're extremely durable. And I was just thoroughly entertained, man.
How is a 125-pound man, and maybe he was 137 on fight night, but a 125-pound man like Brandon Moreno able to absorb all of that damage and seemingly not be hurt by any of those headshots, really? Like, what is he made of, Kenny?
How is Davison Figueiredo 125 pounds, by the way? It's like he looked like he was 145er out there. He looked huge. Moreno's chin is insane. I mean, I would say, and I don't think this is much of an exaggeration, I would say 85% of Davison's shots, and obviously this is a non-scientific statistic from old Ken Flo, 85% of his shots are knockout shots. I mean, he's looking to take your head off with 85% of his strikes. It's insane. And many of those were landing. Many of those were landing on the chin of Brandon Moreno, and the dude was still standing. Not only was he still standing, he was countering right after that. He'd eat a shot and kind of his head would flip back and he'd automatically throw like three shots right back. Dude, what a fight. It was insane. Brandon Moreno is a stud, man.
Absolute stud, and so is Figueiredo, and he's so accurate as Davison on the feet. I mean, consistently landing north of 55-60% of his significant strike attempts, and epic fight that Dana White has an appetite for running back immediately, which certainly dovetails with my opinion. Without an obvious flyweight contender with respect to Cody Garbrandt, Brandon Moreno has earned a second championship opportunity. Let's also not forget he took this fight on 3 weeks. So did Figueiredo. And there are some advantages, right, for Moreno being in that climate, touching down on that canvas. I do think there is a competitive advantage for guys to compete frequently. There's no doubt about it. But when I asked him in the fighter meeting, I said, would it be nice to have 8 weeks to prepare for this guy? And what did he say? He said we're trying to be positive was the first thing he said, you know? But a lot, you know, he was competitive with Davison Figueiredo. And I do believe that Figueiredo would have won this fight without the point deduction. I did have it 3-2 for Figueiredo. You know, my twin brother and many other people out there disagree. Before I get to Jason Herzog and the point deduction, did you have a score for this fight?
I did. I had rounds 1, 2, and 5 for Davison.
Me too.
I had round 3 as a 9-9 myself. I actually thought that Davison squeezed it out because, again, if we're talking about damage and effectiveness of grappling and striking, I thought Davison would have won that round. Now, with the point deduction, that's a 9-9. And round 4, I definitely had for Brandon Moreno. So, again, that's the way I called it. Look, was that something similar to what you had?
Yes. I would like to go back and watch the second round, but I saw it that way as well. Everything I know pretty much about scoring, I have learned from sit-downs with John McCarthy and from immersing myself in the rules, okay? Yes. So here's the deal with the point deduction. And some people know this, some people don't. I'm sure you know this, Ken Flo. But essentially, when a foul is committed, right, and hopefully the fighters out here who are listening to this heed this advice, if you get kicked in the balls, dry heave and cough, right? Because there's a good chance they're going to take a point away. So essentially what Jason Herzog has to determine, or any referee has to determine in that moment, which is very difficult, is how is that foul going to impact the rest of the fight? So you have to determine not only was it inadvertent, was it accidental? Because if it's intentional, it's easy. You just take a fucking point. But if it's accidental, as this strike was deemed to be, then you say, all right, well, the toes were pointed, you know, right on his Johnson, right? I mean, it was a perfect groin strike. And Brandon Moreno, as tough as they come, is writhing in pain, and it looks like he's going to throw up in the octagon, right? So once he starts dry heaving, I'm thinking you got to take a point, because what a referee is supposed to do is try to level the playing field based upon how they think that foul is going to affect the rest of the fight. Now, retrospectively, Kenny, I would say that it didn't have an impact on the rest of the fight largely. Brandon didn't complain about it after the fact. He didn't take the full 5 minutes that were allotted. Mm-hmm. And so I think retroactively, I would say, you know, maybe you didn't have to take the point, but I absolutely believe that Jason Herzog made the right decision in that moment, because a referee has no choice but to do his best in a singular moment to forecast how that strike might have impacted the rest of the fight.
No question. I think, listen, the only reason I know that is because I remember you talking about that from a few years ago. Now, that was tough. No one wants to see a point deduction like that, especially on a first go. You know, I don't know of many ball shots that aren't going to have an impact on the rest of the fight, but I'll tell you one thing that probably influenced that. Okay. And again, this is me, and Jason Herzog is an amazing ref, and I agree with him. But if we didn't see an eye poke before that, I don't know if there would have been a point deduction. I'm not sure. I am totally speculating here,
right,
but I don't think that helped the cause of Davison Figueiredo.
I hadn't thought of that. I think it's a very fair point to inject into the conversation, and you can be sure the next time I see Jason, I will bring that to his attention. And he doesn't shy away. He's an outstanding referee.
He really is.
And is in complete control of that octagon. We are going to spend more time on Figueredo and Moreno with Ray Longo, but I would assume that that you believe Brandon Moreno should be the next title challenger based upon the inconclusive nature of this final result, or not necessarily.
Listen, I would love to see that fight. I think it's much deserved. I hope the timing works out that they can run it back. You know, listen, obviously there's Cody Garbrandt out there. There's a couple others, but just based on the fact that Brandon Moreno asked for this, he took this fight, 3 weeks ago, he fought on the same night as Davison Figueiredo. He wanted this. He stepped up to the plate and delivered one of the best fights of the year when we really needed it, I think.
Yeah.
You know. So I thought it was a spectacular fight. And the dude's a stud. You know, I said, no disrespect to the other fighters on the card. I think they should have given them all the bonuses that night. I thought that there were some great finishes and some impressive performances, but as far as matchmaking goes and evenness of how these guys were matched together, I thought it was just brilliant. What a fight.
And my colleague Megan O'Leary tells me that Brandon Moreno loves to drive, but the dude did go back to Tijuana for a few days, drove back, and then drove back to Las Vegas within those 3 weeks, and was on weight the night before the fight. That's the other angle with Davison Figueiredo, right? Probably 146 pounds or so entering that octagon, and maybe a few lighter because he was so sick the night before.
Yes.
And again, we're not making excuses, right, when we trot that out there. And if you'll notice, we did not mention it on the broadcast. I think I was the only one of the three of us who had that information before we went to the air. But this is a much easier weight cut for Brandon Moreno, Kemflo, than it is for Davison Figueiredo. And I think he has a better chance to make the weight. Might get sick afterward, but I think he has a better chance to make the weight when he's, you know, turning around quickly. I just have said, I hope I'm wrong about this, but I see him as a bantamweight eventually. I don't know how many title defenses it's going to take. I just don't see Figueiredo being able to consistently make this. Now there's no fat on him.
I agree. Listen, I think he's huge. He's huge for the weight class. Again, I do think it is a different mentality. I would think anyways, that as champion, if you have that belt, what is more motivating than that? If you can't make the weight as champion, you know that you are going to be in big trouble, you know, with your team, with the organization, if you're not making the weight. But I do agree, you know, he's a huge guy. He's got a big frame. I know he struggled with weight in the past, but if he doesn't get his act together, he could lose, you know, the biggest opportunity of his life. So I think for him to squander that, for him to screw it up, would be terrible. Either he just decides after a few title defenses, he goes, you know what? I'm done with this. I'm good. I don't want to risk it anymore. I'm just going to go up and wait and look for a new challenge.
Yeah.
But what he can't do is miss weight as champion. That would be very bad.
And he's made weight three consecutive times. So power to Davison Figueiredo, Deus de Geha. And who knows if the stomach illness or infection was a byproduct of the weight cut or not. I think it had to be linked in some way, shape, or form, but you never do know. And I also will say, and I said this on the broadcast, but I want to say for this audience, Davison Figueiredo is a brilliant little man. I mean, he's thoughtful, he is smart, and because he only speaks Brazilian Portuguese, that's lost on the American audience. Read his subtitles, you know, listen to the interpretations. I mean, this dude was one powerful quote after another all fight week long, and I think sometimes that supreme intelligence is not something we give a guy credit for because we can't understand anything coming out of his mouth. I think this guy is the total package mentally, physically, intellectually. I love him.
I'll say this, you know, there were a few times where maybe he defensively wasn't as sound as I would have liked to see him. However, you don't see someone with that kind of craft, with that kind of skill, who's not going to be an intelligent dude. You know, clearly he's got something going on there between the ears. And I thought that it was, just a brilliant performance. He's a guy that a lot of people are going to watch fight. I will go back to what you said about weigh-ins, John, and it's a great point. What people forget is anytime you are depleting your body, right, of water and you're dehydrating yourself, not to mention that is compounded by the intense fight camp that is taking place, I can't tell you how many times I got sick or had some kind of immune issue, and because that's when your body needs it most. That's why you see a lot of guys with staph infections. You see a lot of guys get colds and sick and all that stuff because their body's going through so much, right? Yeah. Between the weight cut, the training, and everything else.
Paul Felder was so sick on that Friday a couple weeks ago, a month ago, I guess now. Yeah. I mean, Thursday night from hell. And then Friday he was sick. And then when he felt better, though, he was so excited because obviously he fought well and eventually was able to turn that corner, as Figueiredo was able to do. We'll have more on the main event with Ray Longo, of course. But how about Charles Du Bronx Oliveira, Ken Flo, right? You remember when he was 20 years old submitting Darren Elkins on Versus in his UFC debut. And look at him now, man. 9-1 since returning to 155 pounds. A dominant grappling effort against Tony Ferguson. Take it any way you want to go, my man. What'd you think of the co-main event?
Well, clearly, it was the right move keeping him at lightweight. And I think it goes to show that, there's the guys, obviously, who have been around the sport for too long. And you're like, it's time to hang it up. But there's also the guys that maybe struggle a little bit early on in their career and then come back to really mature and put it all together. Charles Oliveira is clearly that kind of individual where he is not only comfortable in the octagon, but his skills have matured. He's putting it all together perfectly. And now he's put himself in a position to beat one of the greatest lightweights of all time. I thought it was an excellent performance. I thought that, if you didn't know about Tony's background, you'd think Tony was just another fighter. When that is clearly not the case. Tony obviously showed a toughness that is unlike anyone else out there or very few out there. However, if you say that Charles Oliveira did anything else other than dominate that fight, you weren't looking at the right fight. It was extremely dominant. It was an amazing performance. And you know what? It'd be hard to kind of deny him a potential title shot. Maybe for his next fight or maybe another fight, maybe he deserves one more fight after this one, but how do you argue that? I mean, he just beat one of the best lightweights to ever do it. And he dominated, man. What a performance and what a time to do it.
So Tony Ferguson is not the tapping type.
No,
we know he's not. That. How's that arm feel today? Do you have any intel for us on how he was able to survive and what type of injuries he might have sustained, Dr. Florian?
Yeah, I'll say this. Listen, if you have an opportunity to choke someone over going for an arm lock, you always go for the choke for that reason, because there are psychopaths out there where it doesn't matter. Go ahead, break my arm. You have the Dan Hardys. You have the Tim Sylvias. You have the Carla Esparzas, where it's like, okay, it's a broken arm. I'll deal with it. Or are you going to stretch out my ligaments? Oh, boo-hoo. Not a big deal, And we've all been there. We've all had those things. But,
not all of us.
Yeah,
not all of us.
There's tough dudes, and then there's Tony Ferguson's. So, I think that it was a perfectly executed arm lock, but Tony Ferguson doesn't believe in arm locks. That's the problem.
Built different,
Built different.
We're all built a little bit different. So, there is a conversation to be had about the soon-to-be 37-year-old Tony Ferguson, and I don't want to make any great leap because he was dominated on the ground by Charles Oliveira, but there were wholesale changes, right? Rashad Holloway and Eddie Bravo were not in the corner. Tony was extremely testy with me in our fighter meeting, not at all happy with whatever I might have said on a broadcast or in a public forum. Tony and I have always had a great relationship. But I think he came in with an agenda to be tight-lipped about the changes he had made during his training camp and didn't necessarily like that line of questioning. He's a trendsetter. He doesn't like handholders. He doesn't surround himself with a lot of pro fighters because he considers most of them to be yes men, and he doesn't really want to get too comfortable. But whatever he was doing, while physically and mentally he seemed to be in a pretty good place, it didn't produce the desired result. And I'm curious what you think about Tony, not only this past Saturday, but how he spins this forward.
This is difficult because, I'll say this. I'm not saying this is the case for someone like Tony Ferguson. I would take that leap for someone like a Jacare Souza. Okay. That. When a fighter is kind of done in their career, the way it happens typically is like gradually, then all of a sudden, right? Yes. When you see a fighter just kind of go, could that be the case for Tony Ferguson? It's possible because you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, well, the Justin Gaethje fight. Yes, that could have done it. But name a Tony Ferguson fight where it wasn't totally insane. I mean, 80% of his fights were crazy where he won, but he also took a ton of damage. So this is why I say, you know, I say this for my jiu-jitsu students. I say this for anyone who is fighting. There is an energy scarcity issue, right? And there is a power scarcity issue. And there is a durability scarcity issue where, yes, that can work for the time being. But just understand that your ability to be durable is limited. It is fixed. And it never gets bigger, in my opinion. Right. It only gets shorter. And people who think that, like, I'm going to, you know, outgrind my opponent, to take that approach day in and day out, or fight in, fight out, is stupid. Candidly, it's just, it's not the right approach. Yeah, it can work. It doesn't mean that's the approach you're supposed to use as a martial artist. As humans, we are constantly trying to look for ways to be more efficient, to be more creative, to be more effective. And if we're just leading with our heart and our durability every single time out, then you better be prepared for that to go away.
If I was listening to this podcast, I would probably rewind it 90 seconds and listen to what you just said again, because you put it beautifully and hit on a lot of different points. And I do think he retains his status resume-wise as one of the best lightweights in UFC history. But
no question,
this is the first time that he has fought twice in a calendar year since 2016. And now all of a sudden, on the heels of W12, it's L2, right? The 12 fight winning streak and now two consecutive losses. He's still one of the biggest names in this division. He's still going to be fighting a top six or seven guy. There's no doubt about it. But Charles Oliveira is now on a championship trajectory and Tony Ferguson is not. And this is the first time in a long time, Kenny, where he has been, I think, firmly out of that title conversation.
Hey, and I'll say this. Listen, I think that Tony wasn't necessarily recognized as, in my opinion, again, the narrative it changes. But I think that I don't think Tony was necessarily known as the most technical striker. And I don't, for me, I never really believed that narrative that he was very dangerous on his back necessarily. Again, I think that was something where he's had some submissions. He definitely, you know, locked up, Kevin Lee with the triangle choke and things like that. Is that his strength, in my opinion? No. I think what is his strength is the fact that the way that he puts it all together, and the fact that he is one of the toughest dudes in the world, the fact that he will repeatedly back you up is what makes him such a difficult fighter. He finds a way to win. Is he this technical phenom? No, he never has been. So, you know, I think that's where Charles Oliveira really exposed him. So we have to talk about that as well. Hey, shit, Charles Oliveira is just damn good as well.
A lot of people are salivating at a Charles Oliveira, Khabib Nurmagomedov fight to see that dynamic play out on the ground. I still believe Khabib Nurmagomedov is retired, and I don't know what type of competitive challenge would bring him back. I do think the Oliveira challenge would probably be intriguing for Khabib right now with the 8-fight winning streak and with what he did to Tony, you know?
No question, dude. I think that, you know, if you're looking for a guy that could pose a problem for Khabib, Khabib does his best work on the ground. Charles Oliveira, you could argue, does his best work on the ground, but he ain't too shabby on the feet either.
Yeah,
that's the thing. Yeah. He's a much more technical striker than Khabib. So I think you have this advantage, which I think if I'm building up this fight, right, what makes it intriguing is the fact that he is very technical. He's going to be more dangerous than Khabib on the feet, but he also possesses some really savvy submission skills, which could potentially thwart some of the effectiveness of Khabib Nurmagomedov. I will, piggyback on that and say, unfortunately, for everyone who was looking forward to that Tony Ferguson, Khabib Nurmagomedov fight, I think Charles Oliveira just killed all of our hopes and dreams of us being salivating for that fight. Now you're like, okay, I know the result of that fight now. It would have been Khabib in another potential massacre, you know? And it's, again, no disrespect, but based on what we saw on the ground from Tony, Khabib would have fully taken advantage of that.
Yeah, and if Justin Gaethje didn't close the door on Khabib and Tony never sharing the octagon despite 5 attempts, then Charles Oliveira, I think, sealed it shut. So Ray Longo is scheduled to join us in about 8 seconds, right? He just texted me, how we looking, right? He is jonesing to talk about UFC 256. So Longo coming up in 60 seconds. But if you're looking for the ultimate stocking stuffers for this holiday season, look no further, because our sponsors, Manscaped, have the tools to make you win this year's stocking stuffer or white elephant competition. As many of you know, Manscaped is ahead of its time and is the only brand dedicated to below-the-waist grooming and hygiene products. Thankfully, they have also released their products now to our international audience. Products are now across Europe, Canada, and Australia. And you know, I've done probably more traveling this year than in most years past. I don't leave home without my Lawnmower 3.0, but Manscaped has a lot more to offer than just the lawnmower that we've been talking about. A lot of these products are great stocking stuffers: the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant, Crop Cleanser Body Wash, which is a full body wash that you can also use on your hair. Kenflo loves the Crop Mop Ball Wipes, by the way. Don't shoot the messenger. They've also got Foot Duster Foot Deodorant. And of course, the Weed Whacker Nose and Ear Hair Trimmer, which, like the lawnmower, has that proprietary skin-safe technology. So if you want to help out your partner, dad, brother, or friend, get them something they will actually use. And it's almost sure to get a laugh as well. We got a deal for you, 20% off, free shipping, right now at manscaped.com/AF. No promo code required. Just go to manscaped.com/AF and be the ballsiest gift giver this year with Manscaped. All right, let us get to the impatient star of the show, Ray Longo.
Now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in this fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute. Starring Ray Longo. The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
How about Ray Longo telling Chris Weidman that he wants him to punch a hole in the guy's fucking chest? What a legend you are.
Oh, man. Those were the days, huh?
Those were the days. So you know what I did today?
You would have felt pretty bad if he actually put a hole in someone's chest, though, right? I mean, that would have been, you would have been an accessory to murder. You know, how many years are you doing in jail? Thankfully, that didn't happen.
Listen, anything that happens in that cage is all good. As soon as that cage door closes, I agree with you. But once that door is locked, anything goes.
I agree.
Anything.
So it is about 4:30 p.m. Pacific time here on a Sunday. You know who I spent the day with today, Ray?
I could be. Is he short?
The best listener on planet Earth, Matt Serra.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's a good listener. You didn't get a word in edgewise. Oh, yeah. I like this. I'd like to witness that.
Well, I got to tell you, man, last night was one of the best cards that I've ever had the chance to call. But it was a little bittersweet because last night was to be Aljamain Sterling's first championship opportunity. And I did have that in my head a lot last night that Aljo and Piotr Jan were supposed to be gracing that octagon. But yeah, we filmed the best of 2020 today. And man, your boy is just out of his skull. You know, he's like, you talk to Longo? I'm like, every fucking Monday I do.
Yeah, he's so self-absorbed, he doesn't even know that at this point.
He's always on. At one point, he's like, why do you and Kenny not have me on the Anik and Florian podcast? And I'm like, dude, come on anytime. Ray. Just vet it through Ray. We'll get you on. All right. So I feel like we could talk about like all 10 winners from Saturday night and even like three or four of the losers. So I'll try to do this as efficiently as possible, Ray. We were just talking about Charles Oliveira and Tony Ferguson. So I guess we'll start there and then sort of skip back to the main event. I mean, this Charles Oliveira is an incredible story for any number of reasons. I feel like I've watched his whole UFC career and I don't know, man, 27 UFC fights at 31 years of age and all the lightweight momentum in the world now. And that signature win that some suggested he didn't have prior to Saturday night.
Yeah. Look, you know, Oliveira actually fought in the Ring of Combat, believe it or not, 2 years ago.
Wow.
And he looked, I mean, he was vicious back then. That day I knew something good was going to happen for him. You know, look, I think last night, even with the Tony Ferguson thing and obviously Oliveira's super talented, but I think everybody, I just wanted to see what the remains of him, of Ferguson was after that Gaethje fight. And I think we got our answer. I didn't like anything I saw. And like, again, not to take away from Oliveira's performance, because obviously he went out there and he was going to dictate where this fight was happening. And he proved that, you know, he was the bully in that fight. But man, I don't know. I kind of feel bad for Ferguson. I think, you know, look, I think the biggest takeaway, and Kenny, I don't know if you'll agree with this or not, is like Rogan saying, like, you know, he runs his own camp. Like when he wants to train, he trains. Like The guy needs guidance at this point. He really does. He got away with, look, super talented guy. I think he got away with it for years. But look, he's been in trouble in fights. I think just crazy has caught up with this guy now. And if he doesn't get straightened out, nobody's buying into it anymore. He could hit the Wing Chun dummy all he wants, but he's going to have to fight. And that wasn't looking good, man. So Oliveira did a good job. I think we got some answers on Tony. He's not getting any younger. Yeah. I feel bad because he had such a win streak. He never got that big fight. But, man, talk about, does anybody want to see the Khabib fight after last night?
He just made that exact point. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to see it. I couldn't care less now. Nothing. You know what I mean? So
I felt like I spent years banging the drum that he was just criminally underappreciated, that the winning streak even didn't get the credit that it deserved. And it's disappointing.
I agree with you. And I think that's the sad part of the story is that, he just never got that shot and he deserved it. He earned it. And I don't know where this guy goes. I got to tell you, Kenny, even the corner work, you don't tell that guy after the second round, you got to knock this guy out or you're losing. You got to stop him. You're doing good. I don't get that, man. No urgency. But then again, I don't want to even dump it on the corner. I mean, if he's doing his own thing, I didn't see Eddie Bravo in the corner. I don't know what that was about. But, I hope he doesn't go to a route where you had one loss and everybody's disappearing, because you start blaming those people instead of looking inside to yourself. But it was sad, man, but again, I don't want to take away anything from Oliveira. He's going to get a big fight out of this. And what a performance he had, man. There's nothing to say. He just was phenomenal.
Yeah. Those were training partners, not coaches, in Tony Ferguson's corner. Ray, would you feel less bad for Tony if I told you he called me a little bitch in our fighter meeting? Would you feel less bad?
Did he really?
He did call me a little bitch, but that's okay. I've always had a great relationship with Tony. And as Kenny knows acutely, I am so conditioned now, show in and show out, to putting out fires with some coach or some fighter. This one personally was a little bit upsetting to me because I hold Tony in the highest regard, and I feel like I've kind of championed his cause more than most fighters. I feel like I have promoted the hell out of him and his cause. So I don't know exactly what he was upset with, but no, I do think some soul searching needs to happen. And I would like to see, in my limited knowledge, Kenny, him realign with Rashad Holloway and Eddie Bravo. I don't know who's being blamed for what, but I do believe they realized a lot of success as a team, and Rashad was a good head coach for him,
Yeah. It's unfortunate. I think that losing after having so much success and then losing in that manner to someone like Justin Gaethje, I think will mess with you a little bit. And who knows, so much of it also comes down to a lot of the personal things that happen that we just don't know about.
Yeah.
And who knows, but I agree with Ray 100% that, there needs to be some kind of, soul searching, where you kind of look at yourself and go, what am I doing here? Am I doing the best thing for me? Am I becoming a better martial artist, or am I getting worse? Toughness is there and always will be, but as far as skills, he needs to get better. Again, is that the guy that fought Rafael Dos Anjos in Mexico City? Right. Is that the guy that dug down deep against Lando Venata? And, I don't know. It's tough. Listen, Charles Oliveira is a highly skilled fighter, and I think it might have been a difficult matchup for him for sure. But to see Tony Ferguson, a guy who wrestled at the college level, maybe not Division I, get taken down like that without a struggle, I don't know. It just didn't look to me like it was Tony in his prime,
I couldn't agree more with Kenny. And I got to tell you, toughness, nobody's going to question that guy's
unbelievable.
Toughness. But it's at the point now where it's going to start hurting him. He didn't even want to go down against Gaethje. He ate shots that luckily the ref saved him, no matter what. But look how tough he was. His arm got bent in an unnatural position. The guy's not tapping. We know he's tough. But that now is, as you get older, that's not going to – that you need more than that. Now, when you get older, you got to fight with experience, right? You know how to tie a guy up. We've seen guys win fights just based on experience. He's not demonstrating that. He's still the guy that he thinks he was 8 years ago, and he's not. And I'll tell you what, I always go back to this. Would he have beat Oliveira 5 years ago? And I'm going to say, yeah, I think he might have walked right through him. I mean, that was a big test last night, because I thought Ferguson was going to win that fight. I really did. And he wasn't even close.
Yeah.
So, man, it's just sad. But Oliveira, hats off to him, man. He's been around forever. And he looks like he's, peaking now at the right time. So I'm excited to see what the future holds for him.
I think this is also a reminder for the fans watching that no matter how good a fighter was at a certain point, is that after a certain amount of damage, they're not going to be the same. This sport will get everybody if you stay in the game long enough. That's the thing. It's not, people, again, we forget. We have this idea and we, stay in the moment. We have fun and we watch these events, but we forget that we are human and that we are not invincible.
Guess who forgets that, though? The fighter. That's the problem. Right. He needs to be surrounded right now by complete honesty. That's it. I mean, no yes men, zero, because that's not going to help you at this point. And so, now, yeah.
Well, you're sort of providing a natural transition to a couple of Brazilian fighters, Junior Dos Santos and Jacare Souza, who seemingly have left their fighting primes. I hate to make some grand statement about Jacare Souza, but he did turn 41 during fight week. And Kenny, I'll lead with you on this. And I don't know if you were sort of working this way when it comes to these two fighters in particular, but I think they both still derive a lot of confidence in their preparation and in their training and their ability to still go hard and do the three a days. Junior Dos Santos feels like a world champion when he's training, but it's four straight losses now, and they've all been pretty devastating. You got anything for me on those two? And if there's any parallel to be drawn there.
Those are guys that are repeating patterns that are not going to help them for fights. I think Junior Dos Santos repeatedly puts himself in harm's way in fights at a range that is really dangerous. He's a heavyweight fighter. And you fight a guy like Gunn, who, in my opinion, that's one of the reasons why you carry a weapon if you need to. Massive. Okay. I'm not taking that guy down and submitting him. That's a massive individual. And if he hits you, you're going to be in trouble. And Junior Dos Santos is fighting at a range, in my opinion, which is really, really dangerous. And it's not sustainable. And Jacare Souza looks like a shell of his former self. When I see a guy who's on top, he got the takedown on Kevin Holland, and he's sitting on his heels and kind of covering up.
Yeah.
What is going on? And also, he was dancing before the fight and then talking. You're just going right into Kevin Holland's wheelhouse.
Dude, when you're showing up to just collect a check, I don't care what job you have. If you're just showing up to collect a check, you don't want to be there. Period. And to me, it looks like Jacare doesn't want to be there. It's hard for me to say that because he's accomplished so much in the jiu-jitsu 100%. World. He's accomplished so much in the MMA world. But when I see that, that doesn't look like he wants to be there. And that's unfortunate, and that's dangerous.
Yeah. Listen, at 41, he's got nothing to prove. He's got nothing to prove. You know what I mean? He's entering into an area now where you could get hurt, really, really hurt. And so Sanders wasn't even looking at that guy when he got hit with the elbow. You know what I'm saying? His mechanics looked like you're in a goddamn fight with an animal. You don't take your fucking eyes off him. He's just walking around and, weird. I don't know. I mean, that's not a good sign.
Right.
I'll say this, right? I couldn't agree more. Again, he didn't really want to be there either. He got hurt with a shot and kind of started looking away. Now, another thing. There's a reason why, and I was kind of, someone was asking the question, hey, that was an illegal shot by Junior Dos Santos. There's a reason why in boxing, there's two rules in boxing. One, you're not supposed to turn your back to your opponent. Number two, you're not allowed to hit in the back of the head. Now, the reason why the first rule exists is because you can't, you'd be actually cheating the rules by going like this. Like, he can't hit me in the head anymore. Right. Oh, why is he hitting me on the head? Because you're turning your back. That's why that rule exists.
Larry Bird actually would have been a great fighter because he has eyes in the back of his head, but that's neither here nor there. Ray, you know who Larry Bird is, I assume.
I love Larry Bird, one of the best. I love Larry Bird.
Kevin Holland. Holland, 5 wins in 7 months. I'm an amateur, okay? You guys are the experts. But from the moment Kevin Holland made his short-notice UFC debut against Thiago Santos in L.A. in August of 2018, I had seen some regional footage. I thought he had all the skills to be champion. He was a Brazilian jiu-jitsu brown belt under Travis Luter then. He is elevated to the black belt level now. I think, as he has suggested, when he puts on some muscle and makes a full commitment to the middleweight division, which is his desire, championship ceiling for me, Ray, and what a luxury for the UFC to have an anyone, anywhere, anytime type of fighter who's a bona fide middleweight contender.
Hey, listen, man, I bought my ticket last night. I jumped on the Kevin Holland train, man. Yes. I'm on board. I like, you know what? You know, I think Cody might have put out something. What's your takeaway from this fight? You know, one of my takeaways was just sportsmanship. And really humbleness. And like Kevin Holland, even like, you know, that was great. No, I got that from Nico Price, you know, Cyril Gane. Oh, you know, what a nice guy. Oh, that might have been, man, I hope it wasn't illegal. It looked like, you know, there were so many interviews where people were just humble. The sportsmanship I thought was phenomenal. I love listening to people talk. I thought Kevin was phenomenal last night. Like Travis Luter, I know, you know, Matt did the show with him. And, man, that guy was 1 second away from beating Anderson Silva. I mean, if you go back and look at that, he had Anderson mounted. Do you remember that fight with Luter? I mean, crazy. Yep. So, you know, he gave it up to his coach. He seems like he's in the present moment, man. He understands it. He loves it. Major problem at this point.
So, Kenny, Kevin Holland's grandfather used to say to him, pressure busts pipes and you're built like a pipe, right? So Holland did tell us in our fighter meeting, and I think this has even changed since last Wednesday, but he said that he wanted to take 2 months off to put on weight so that there would sort of be more of a weight cut down, you know, because he could come in 81, 82 if he really needed to. Wow. So I do think that that is going to be part of the immediate future for Kevin Holland, but just incredible. To have this mentality, Kenny, to always be ready and willing and able. And if a star wasn't born Saturday night, then I don't know what else he needs to do to become a star. I mean, I just think he's got every tool in and out of the octagon to really take it to the next level.
I agree. I feel like it's really coming together for him right now. You look at how his game is developing as a striker, as a jiu-jitsu guy. And you talk about who wanted to be there, him or Jacare Souza. Like, there wasn't one point, there wasn't almost 1 second where Kevin Holland wasn't trying to hurt Jacare, like legitimately hurt him from any place. So Kevin is a guy who's hungry. He wants to be in there. You could see that he's dedicated to the sport. And the fact that he's been able to have not only this level of consistency, but this level of activity is really, really rare. And I'm happy for the guy, man. The future is bright.
And guess what? And Kevin Holland didn't buy into the narrative that if that fight hit the floor, he was going to get strangled. And then I'm not sure I wasn't into that myself. But, man, I love it when a guy like that goes for it. He throws up his own submissions. Yeah, he doesn't buy into that. The second you buy into it, the guy's a D1 wrestler, I can never take him down, you lost the fight. You know, and he seems like a guy who's so sure of himself, and I think he's got a ways to go, don't get me wrong, but I'll tell you what, mentally this guy's he's right on point right now, and that was a great win. That's a confidence booster for him. And it seems like he's around the right people, and
absolutely, it's a great story. I mean, he's 8-2 in the UFC now with 5 straight wins, but Travis Luter really helped him financially and other ways early on when he was cutting his teeth as a mixed martial artist. And Travis really liked this matchup better than the Jack Hermanson main event that went away for Kevin Holland because he tested positive for COVID-19. So chips to the center of the table on Kevin Holland. We'll see where Jacare Souza goes from here. Felt like he put in the right training camp, you know, brought in some 7'2" Brazilian Ken Flo that they called Trouble. Also brought Lyoto Machida to his house, but
wow.
Didn't work out for Jacare Souza. It did not work out for Junior Dos Santos. Time permitting, more on Ciryl Gane at the end of the program. But Ken Flo, I would like to lead with you. And I promise, Ray, I'll get to the Figueredo stuff. I promise I'll give platform for that. But Dern, Kenny, the evolution of Mackenzie Dern under Jason Perillo on the feet has been pretty incredible. And I'm a big fan of Vina Jangidoba too. I do wish we saw a little bit more grappling here. I think the jiu-jitsu fan in me really wanted to see these women go back and forth. But Kenny, what'd you think about Mackenzie Dern as she runs her winning streak to 3 in the UFC?
It was certainly a tough fight for her. I thought that she definitely looks better on the feet. There's no question that Perillo is helping her out. I think that she needed to settle down a little bit more and also keep her eyes on the target. You know, she was kind of swinging and kind of dropping her head down and things. But there's no question that she looks more comfortable. She's moving her feet way better. She's not as plodding. She's not as flat-footed. And I thought really that was the difference. I think that's why she beat Jangidoba, in my opinion. So I thought it was a close fight, but that's the way I had it. I think the other thing that she needs to make better, I think, are the takedowns. I don't think that she's as clean or as efficient with her takedowns as she can be. And if she has this huge advantage on the ground, which I believe she does have, being a world-class jiu-jitsu practitioner, she needs to improve her takedowns, especially if she wants to have fights where she's not taking as much damage. But I thought it was a promising fight and a move in the right direction for her, no question.
Yeah,
right.
Super close fight. She's got a you know, like, again, not the most technical, but her attitude and her will to win, which you can't teach, that's what she had in that fight. She refused to lose, and that was the difference in the fight. They both are very competitive, loved the other girl too. Man, did they throw down, but awesome her will fight to win and her desire. She could have packed it in after the nose was, you know, broke or whatever, but you know what? She stayed in there. Like, again, I didn't think it was technically, you know, she's going to grow, but I think the things that you can't teach, she has, and that's what's going to elevate her in the future.
All right, I'm going to try to rip through a few of these other names, and then we will close out our conversation today with Davison Figueiredo, with Ray, at least. Kenny, I'm going to lead with you on this one. Gavin Tucker. If I had to pick one Canadian fighter right now to break through and win a UFC championship, I think he's the best talent we have right now out of Canada. He's had to deal with a lot of issues injury-wise from that awful damage in the Rick Glenn fight. Lost 2 years of his career, so he's now 34. But that is a shiny pro record, 13-1. Billy Q had won 8 consecutive fights. I love me some Gavin Tucker, and I think with the right fights next, he could really make a run. He's cut from the same cloth as you, man. He's super cerebral and strategic. And like, I'm not saying stylistically he is, but everything's well thought, everything to a T, attention to detail, doesn't even begin to describe it.
He's a thinker, man. And even, you know, I loved his interview with Joe when he was talking about, you know, some of the things that he wished he did better. He was immediately, you know, thinking about things that he could have done better, which to me is a sign of a dude who is not just satisfied with getting the win. He wants to do it in the cleanest, best way possible.
Yeah.
He has the toughness. He's got the durability. He's got the smarts, and he's developing nicely, man. And Billy Q, as you know, we've talked about before, is one of the toughest dudes in that division as far as toughness. You know, he really has proved that time and time again. I thought that he was getting a little bit too wild. I don't think he was as calculating as Gavin. I think that was the difference. But beating a guy like Billy Q, I think, says a lot about Gavin. I think his ceiling is pretty high. So I thought that was a huge win. I definitely want to see more of this kid.
And again, he's probably number 27 in the world. I'm not suggesting that he's ready for Volkanovski, but I do think that eventually he can climb. So, Ray, you and Billy Q should probably go to the barbershop together. You both need a fucking haircut in the worst way. What'd you think of Tucker v. Quarantello?
Oh, listen, I think he was a half step ahead of Billy Q. Billy Q's, you know, look, no one's going to question that guy's heart and toughness either, but he was just a half step behind. I think once Tucker started getting the reads on Billy, he started even looking better and better. And, you know, Billy needed to make some adjustments that he didn't. I think, you know, they were counting on his toughness and this guy breaking, and Billy doing what he always does, come on in the third round and just, you know, finish it. But like, again, that's got to be something that's looked at now, because now he's got to be a smarter fighter. And, you know, if he wants to continue going forward, because we know he's got the heart and we know he's got the gas tank. But, you know, he's got to, I think, become a little more, you know, technical at this point.
Kenny, I think you'll appreciate this detail, and perhaps our audience will as well, in terms of Gavin Tucker being a thinker. So he signed to fight Billy Q in April, and of course, COVID-19 intervened. But he said there were almost six more rounds of film on Billy Q now since he had initially signed to fight him. You know, I mean, Gavin Tucker did his fucking homework, and the F-bombs are just getting out of control, and they're not stopping now.
I don't think he needed another six rounds to look at Billy Q. I think, Billy, you know what's coming with Billy Q.
Hey, don't shoot the messenger. Rafael Fiziev. I sort of joked on broadcast, if you don't know the name, shame on you. But at this point, like, go Google Rafael Fiziev. If for some reason you're actually an Anakin Florian podcast viewer and you did not watch him do that to Renato Moicano, I'd like to see the referee sort of give a beat in there, if I'm being honest. But Kenflo, what'd you think of Rafael Fiziev?
Listen, don't stand in front of him for too long. That's what I think. The speed and the power was, you know, it was clear he had that advantage over Moicano. And I think Moicano got a little stubborn there. And I think he tried to beat him at his own game. And sometimes as a fighter, you got to go, you know what? You're better here. I got to switch things up or do things a little differently.
Yeah.
He wasn't using his range like I thought he should have. There were moments where he was getting a good jab off, but then he started getting into that range where Fiziev was just way too good and way too fast. But dude, I mean, that is a striker who will really mess you up. If you want to go toe to toe with someone like that, be prepared to be sleeping. I mean, that dude is extremely dangerous. He's someone to watch. I would love to see his wrestling and grappling game improve, because he could do a lot of damage in that division.
So, Ray,
yes,
I need to go back and watch Rafael Fiziev's UFC debut against Magomed Mustafayev. This was my first time watching Fiziev fight live. I don't remember his UFC debut when he got TKO'd in round one, but I don't know, man. This dude would appear to be a real problem. You're a striking guy. What do you think of Rafael Fiziev?
Oh, you can't not like his striking. I mean, he's explosive as hell. I mean, you know, every time he lands a kick, it's like he's being shot with a cannon. But no, he looks good. Like, again, I'd like to see, you know, a complete game. We don't really know yet, but I think Kenny's right. Moicano made a decision to prove everybody wrong, and I think that was his undoing. Even though I'm not taking anything away. I think that fight was stopped maybe a little too early. I think they should have given him a chance to work on the floor, but that, you know, it is what it is. The guy looked great, you know, and he was a great fight for him against a big name guy.
Yeah.
You know, so that's striking wise. It doesn't get much better than that.
I mean, he makes commentators react in a way that we do not often react with the way he lands those body kicks. It's insane to listen to in person. So congrats to the Danny Rubenstein managed Rafael Fiziev, as he improves to 9-1 overall. He said Moicano was the best fighter that he would have faced and brought a lot to the table, and didn't need too long to dispose of him. Tisha Torres, a big winner, as was Cub Swanson. You got to feel good for Killer Cub, the father of three. Always feel good for the fathers with a bunch of kids, right? I mean, he's got three of them that are super young, and to come back from an ACL surgery like that. Kenny, Crone Gracie, that win was just awesome last October. He goes into the Quintet Ultra grappling setting and gets a torn ACL against Jake Shields, and called it a blessing in disguise. He was tested by Pineda. The leg was chewed up, but huge, huge win and a career full of them for Cubby Swanson.
It really was, man. And again, you know, you look at Cub and the kind of toughness that he's shown and his ability to bounce back from adversity. Let's go back to that Crone fight. Didn't he have like four losses in a row before the Crone fight? He had four losses in a row. He was facing a guy in Crone Gracie who obviously is one of the more dangerous guys as far as jiu-jitsu goes to ever compete inside the octagon. He got the win, you know, when his back was up against the wall. He just tore his ACL. It was a horrible injury. And then just came back against a very tough dude in Pineda who was coming off of a win and looked awesome. Once he settled into the fight, Cub looked phenomenal. His speed was really impressive. I thought that really was the difference, but his ability to throw combinations in tight from the outside was awesome. And once he settled into that fight, man, he made Pineda look pretty bad, to be honest. So it looked like Pineda was running out of steam. Cub Swanson was only getting stronger. And to see one of the good guys in the sport like Cub get a win was awesome.
Yeah. Right. A lot of competition for bonus money. As such, Cub Swanson did not hear his name called. I'm sure he'll get something discretionarily. But anything for us on Cub Swanson before we get back to the main event?
I think Cub was one of the, at least one of the old guard guys, the old timers, got a victory because nobody else did. So happy for him. You can see how emotional he was after the fight. Heartfelt. And again, like you say, one of the nice guys. And it's great to see those guys get a win.
Can a slippery Peter Barrett plus 250 or so underdog against Chase Hooper in the first fight of the night? Chase the Dream Hooper, 21 years old, minus 310, the favorite. You and I talked privately, and I know you were the first to say it in our conversation, that he certainly didn't deserve that distinction to be a 3-1 favorite over anybody in the UFC. I bring up this fight in the context of the fact that one of the judges actually gave Chase Hooper one of those first two rounds.
Oh, that's
so
great.
So what I am going to do when I get home, so I'm going to show my daughter Riley that round, and then I'm going to show her round five between Davison Figueiredo and Brandon Moreno. I'm going to have Riley give me her scorecards for those two rounds, and we'll see if she saw what we saw or if she saw what the judges saw. I mean, so open scoring. Imagine Peter Barrett looks up at the fucking monitor, right, and sees that he's not winning the fight on one judge's scorecard after two rounds.
Yeah, that's
what you turn to the guy. It's like, really, Sal? I know it wasn't Sal D'Amato, but it's really, man? Okay.
I would have looked at the judge like, what the hell do I need to do in order to win a round? Yeah. First of all, you know, listen, I don't want to be disrespectful to Chase Hooper. I thought he showed a lot of toughness, right, to come back and win, I thought was awesome. However, this guy's a developing talent, and developing talent to the point where I'm not sure he should be in the UFC. And again, I just say that because I think the same thing we saw with the guys like Sage Northcutt and things like that. It is possible to go into the UFC too early. Yeah. And I think that he needs to get better as a striker. He's taking a lot of damage. Dude, he's 21 years old and he's already taking this kind of damage in fights. I mean, if you want to be in the UFC for a long time, and if your goal, like every fighter I think should be, is to be a champion, again, that kind of durability to take that damage eventually goes away. We saw that. We've been talking about that for this whole show, essentially, with Tony and Jacare and JDS. You know, you only have a certain amount of time. Why not go on the regional circuit, get better, come back into the UFC? Because for me, he just doesn't have the striking of a UFC fighter. He does not have that level of striking. He does not have that level of wrestling at this point. And I get it. You can absolutely get better, but is he at a point where he can be competitive against the best guys or even the medium level guys? No. And it would be a shame to see him, you know, go into the UFC this early and then kind of just get left behind.
Yeah. I mean, but look, I mean, I think we can agree that they did give him a good fight that he could have grown from.
Well, of course. And the odds makers oftentimes know more than we do, right? They gave him a fight that he was heavily favored to win.
He was almost a 4-1 favorite, by the way. It was like 380 at one point, which is
the only guy I feel sorry for today is fucking Della Grotta. He must be fucking livid. He had that fight won. He knew he knew the only way to lose was exactly the way he lost. And that's got to be a killer.
So you know, Chase was given a developmental deal after a win on Dana White's Contender Series when he was 18, right? Then he has three fights outside the UFC, Kenny. He goes 2-0-1. Well, no, but I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you. But so he goes 2-0-1 to earn his trip back. And I think most of us look at him and think that still more development needs to be done just to be on the UFC level. But here he is 2-1 in the UFC with a couple of finishes, right? But you're right. Like, that doesn't mean you should be here or sustaining damage, but he's got a fan in me and a lot of upside, of course, at 21 years of age. All right, Ray Longo, your thoughts on the main event?
Thank you.
Talking with my hands.
Yeah, let's do it, baby.
Your thoughts on the main event? How did you score it? I know you've got praise for both sides, I'm sure. I might get a flag of the Nation of Mexico tattooed on my body out of respect to Brandon Moreno. What did you think of the main event?
The main event, I want to say I give an A+ to Jason Herzog. Thought that's the best thing I've seen in a while. Take the fucking point away. Guy gets poked in the eye. He's compromised. Then he gets kicked in the balls. What do you want from the guy? I get a text from my friend because he bet he had a Figueredo when a Paulie goes to fix his in. I go, what fix? I go, you want to get poked in the eye and kicked in the balls? I would have taken 2 points away. Like, I thought that was the best thing I saw. So hats off to her. I love him anyway as the ref. But man, I and you explained that rule perfectly. I was unaware of that myself because I go, wow, I never saw that before. But yeah, it's got to be in the immediate rematch. I'd have to go back and score, but I thought Moreno was going to win that fight, especially with the point. I thought he won that fight, to be honest with you. But either way, they're both great. What a great fight. I don't think people realize how hard it is to take an eye poke and then to get kicked in the balls and be praying on your knees for 2 minutes before you get up. Like, the guy won the fight just for me on that. He's facing a killer. And that guy, if you notice, go back and look at the fight. He was winning that. He was coming on strong. The other guy takes a break. He comes out swinging like a madman again. So, that shit is really rough when I look at it, because I think Moreno was starting to find, he took the best he had to offer. I think he was just starting to break him, and then he got kicked in the nuts. So hats off to Moreno, man. You should get a flag in Mexico. I thought the guy was, like, again, tough as nails. He never wavered on any of those punches either. The only mistake I think he made, took his foot off the gas pedal in the fifth round, which I don't understand, but I guess maybe the shoulder thing was a problem. That was the deciding factor. He has a good fifth round. He unequivocally wins that fight. So
why don't you get the tattoo?
I don't have any tattoos.
All right. All right.
But what a great fight.
I know you're a man of integrity, and I cheated on, like, my biology final in college. I cheated off a football player on all of the multiple choice. Hope they don't come for my degree. But if I'm a coach, right, and my fighter gets kicked in the twig and berries, right?
Yeah.
If you have an intelligent referee in there who understands how the scoring is to be interpreted, all you got to do is dry heave or say audibly to Herzog, "Oh man, I think I'm going to puke." And then he has almost no choice in that moment to take a point away and acknowledge the impact that could have on the rest of the fight.
Yeah, that's cheating. That's the only problem with that rule. But I think as of last night, I think it was very appropriate.
Yes,
But I think you're going to have to be an actor. And I think, you know, the ref is going to be up to his discretion. And that's going to be, that's a problem, what you're saying. But I'm addressing last night, and I think last night it was appropriate. I might say it's bullshit next week, because exactly, somebody might start, I'm good.
Right.
Yeah, you know what I mean? That's going to be the telltale sign. I think I'm ready to go.
Right, exactly.
Cody, we need to clip those. We need to clip those as audio clips. And you're like, now introducing the Ray Longo minute.
You know what I mean? Like, so those guys are out there. Imagine that's part of your training now, right? I want to see you fake a nut shot and just start contorting on the ground for about a minute, then get up and fucking act like nothing happened. John, you're right with that. But I'm saying last night it was perfect.
He's giving us the Fatty McGee sound effects today. Yes. If you ever listen to Adam Sandler, but I like the stairs. They're fun. All right. You got anything else, Ray? We got to get out of here, and you can be sure Cody's wheels are churning when you're making those sound effects. I know Ian Parker's going to be pissed, but real quick, Tisha Torres finished Sam Hughes, and I do believe, did you see this fight, Ray? Tisha Torres looked outstanding early on. I do think there's a parallel to be drawn between Sam Hughes and Max Roshkoff. I mean, Sam Hughes did not want to be there, and she said repeatedly that she couldn't see. Then it seemed like when her coaches were going to stop the fight, she was kind of like, no, maybe I do kind of want to be here. Some crazy extenuating circumstances for her. She is not at all a lifelong martial artist. All of a sudden found herself in the UFC and just getting all those fast hands and feet from Tisha. But I did think of Roshkoff in that moment that maybe Sam Hughes needs a little more seasoning before she comes back is all.
Yeah. What do you want me to say?
Oh, you don't have to say anything. I'll let you go. I mean,
one quick story. I mean, when I'm sitting on my
talk about getting fucking stonewalled. Jesus Christ.
Max Roshkoff? What the hell is
that? Oh, the Robert Drysdale situation. Do you remember when he was sitting on? That's all I'm saying. No, anyway, I should have set that up better, a little underslept.
I can't remember anything.
What's your potting shot today?
No, my potting shot was, so I'm sitting on the couch and I text Aljo. I go, I can't believe I'm fucking sitting on the couch right now. Like, it really did suck. And then he goes, I was thinking the same thing. You know, it's just, I don't know. It's just a little, what a shitty feeling, man, thinking you're going to be there. This guy's finally getting the opportunity and zippo, nothing. That's it.
All right, man. We love you. We'll talk to you next week. We got an award show coming up, a lot to look forward to. We are sending you a Christmas bonus this year.
Really? A Christmas bonus?
Look out for that. And last year, I'll tell our audience this.
Sorry about that.
Tell your wife.
Sorry about that guy.
Right, yeah. He's like, extra rounds is fucking fattening that wallet. I will say, though, speaking of integrity, this is the truth. Raiden cashed his Christmas bonus check last year until May of the following year. So we'll see if it takes you 5 months. I mean, you must really need the money taking you 5 months to cash the check.
And after this COVID drought, that might get checked. To get cashed before it's even sent. Can you Venmo me that? Can you Venmo it right to my bank? Yeah. I mean, this is a rough stretch, man. If I made it through this, I can make it through anything.
Oh, man. All right. Get a haircut. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next Sunday.
No, I'm just trying to make you feel bad, so maybe you fatten the envelope up a little
bit. Done.
All right, guys, I'm out of my mind. All right, listen, enjoy the rest of the show.
Oh, my God.
So good. Yeah, right.
I love you.
Oh, I mean, you talk about Sarah Longo overload for me today, from one into the other. Well, for many guys out there, a lot of their identity is wrapped up in their hair. Not for me, of course, but from how it feels after getting a fresh cut to the way it's perfectly styled before going out. And that's why when a lot of guys get into their 20s, 30s, and 40s, they start noticing the first signs of hair loss, they panic. Because let's face it, no guy is ever ready to go bald, but thankfully now there is Keeps, the simple and easy way to keep your hair. 2 out of 3 guys actually will experience some form of male pattern baldness by the time they're 35, and the best way to prevent hair loss is to do something about it now while you still have hair left. You get treated from home, no doctor's offices with Keeps. You can visit a doctor online, get hair loss medication delivered right to your home. Keeps offers generic versions of the only 2 FDA-approved hair loss products out there. Might have tried them before, but I can guarantee never for this price. Treatment start at just $10 a month. Also, for a limited time, you can get your first month free, and you will find out why more than 100,000 men trust Keeps for their hair loss prevention medication. I've had a lot of friends out there seek treatment, and they got the horror stories in the past to prove it. Now, though, a clear direction for anyone with hair loss who wants to solve the issue for good. So if you are ready to take action and prevent hair loss, go to keeps.com/AF20 to receive your first month of treatment for free. That is KEEPS.com/AF20. Keeps.com/AF20 to get your first month for free. All right. The duck has been waiting patiently. Let us get to the main event challenge.
It's the main event challenge.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fights. I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
All right, now joined by my man, the Duck, on social media. You can find him at Ian Parker MMA. When are we getting the Duck into the handle, bro? Can we do it as soon as, like, tomorrow?
Yeah, as soon as we get some sort of, name on the show when we do the intros. I'm the only one who doesn't got one. So when we do that, just like a little quack, just something, you know? John hates when I bring this stuff up. I'm just kidding. You want me to do it tomorrow? Do it.
I don't hate. No, I just know that you have leaned all in on this Duck nickname. And
you know what? Thank you, Cody. I appreciate that. Yeah, you know, I was going to actually change it to Chris Lee's a stupid motherfucker, but
You're gonna get me in trouble with the commission.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's funny. It's really funny.
Yeah, I was hoping I was gonna slide one of those, and Candido was gonna toss it up on Twitter. But the way I've been talking the last 2 weeks, I think I'm banned for a while.
Cody has pushed out a lot of Ian Parker content on our social media channels, though. I think we promoted you quite well, all things considered. But I do want to congratulate you as the captain of Team Anik, because the concession speech has been delivered 7-3 the final last week. It's 166-148, and because Ken Flo doesn't want to just do opposite picks and he wants to do the analysis the proper way, Team Anik wins the 2020 main event challenge. Congratulations, Ian, and to the other few handicappers that joined in along the way. So now you get to come up with a punishment for Flo, and he has to approve it, right? This isn't Remember the Show, where Bilal Muhammad gets to tell these people to push out these terribly offensive tweets and they don't get to negotiate these tweets. So you can chew on that, but congratulations, honestly, on a great year picking fights.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. You know, I wasn't going to have Kenny like shave an eyebrow on the show or something like that. We were, you know, I don't want him getting fired from BattleBots, especially now that I know that the duck is happened to be a huge, huge, I'm just invading his space. Kenny doesn't want to admit this, but he may just have to admit to the whole Twitter sphere that him and I are in fact best friends. You know, I just may pop up, you know, I'm actually sitting in another room in Kenny's house right now. He just doesn't want to tell anybody.
Right. Well, I wasn't going to tell you that Boston Anik got the Instagram follow from Kenny Florian, but it kind of is what it is. We got to make some picks.
I already knew. It's okay. I know.
Bilal, Remember the Name Muhammad, -335, the favorite here in the featured prelim against Diego Lima, +275. By the way, this show wall to wall on ESPN Plus on Saturday night. So Bilal, as you know, has his own show on this platform alongside my twin brother, Jason. It's Remember the Show. It's live every Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on this very channel. Likely won't be a show this week because, of course, Bilal will be cutting weight. But Bilal, Ian, good friend of yours as well. He's now ranked number 15 in the world. Might be even higher now, right? 13 maybe? Either way, he's won 7 of 8. Only loss in that span was to the man who's headlining this card, Jeff Neal. What do you think, Ian, about Bilal in this spot against Diego Lima?
This is an interesting fight. I don't think Diego Lima is really going to threaten him much of anywhere. And I'm not just saying that because of bias. You know, I do think Bilal's cardio will be better. I think he's going to be the more technical striker. And I think his pressure with his wrestling will be key. We saw in his last fight against Lyman Good how evolved he's been. I'm sorry, how much better. I don't know why I use that word so much. I know it bothers Kenny. How much better his striking has gotten that he's not just a wrestler anymore, you know? And I think really, he's shaking his head right
now.
Well,
it bothered him one time, and you have leaned so heavily into that. One time he took exception.
It's not the word that I have a problem with. It's when it's not. It's either they've evolved or they're not. It's like, you know what I'm saying? It's not the word that bothers me. If they're not, if they haven't evolved, don't use evolve. Right?
You see what I got to do to get Kenny all fucking riled up? You see what I got to do?
Jesus.
It's all right. You know what?
He's got a problem with red cars. You know? No, that's not the issue. Yeah. It's not a red car.
No, it's not a red car. I like Bilal Muhammad here. I think he will.
All right. Diego Lima, Kenny, has won 3 straight fights after some tough stretches in the UFC. Yeah. But this will be his first appearance of the year, replacing Sean Brady. He had a neck injury that required surgery, so that is part of the narrative here. But he has figured some things out, especially on the feet. What do you think about Lima here against Bilal, Kenny?
Listen, I think Diego's tough. I don't think he's an easy out at all for anybody. But I do think that Bilal and his experience and his consistency, it's going to be tough for Diego to go out there and get a win. I like Bilal here as well. I think he goes out there and wins this fight for sure.
Bilal needs a finish. When you're -335, you got to finish the fight. And a lot of Bilal's wins have gone the distance. They have been dominant, but he needs a finish. We'll see if he can get it against Diego Lima. All right. Also at welterweight, former UFC lightweight champ Anthony Showtime Pettis. -200, the favorite against Alex Morono, who is +170. So Pettis was back at welterweight earlier this year, outpointed Donald Cowboy Cerrone. On the other side, you have Morono out of Fortis MMA. He's won 4 of 5, only loss in that stretch to one of the breakout stars of the year, Chaos Williams. And you got to think, Ian, that Morono is just salivating at the possibility of adding this Pettis scalp to his resume. What do you think about Morono against Showtime?
Oh, I'm very confused about how this fight even came about. I'm assuming they're throwing money out of Anthony Pettis to take this fight. This is not.
I think it might be the last fight of Pettis's contract, and he wanted to get one in. I could be wrong.
I mean, that's something. I just, for me, it's very risky because anything could happen in a fight. I think minus 220 is actually a generous line for Anthony Pettis, who just beat Cowboy Cerrone and has fought much higher level of competition. And we don't know where Morano's going to come back after getting knocked out like that by Chaos Williams. So I have no choice. I think Showtime Pettis gets the win here and maybe leverages his way into a contract extension, if you are correct with that.
Ken Flo, Pettis, Morono. I kind of like when superstars give guys like this opportunities when there isn't an obvious next opponent. What do you think about this fight?
Yeah, listen, there's going to be a risk there, but I do think that it does show a certain level of confidence that Pettis feels that that's a fight that he should be able to win. I do think that's a fight he should be able to win. And I don't know if Pettis is going to go out there and finish him necessarily, but I do think he'll get the win.
All right, we got a pick'em fight next at heavyweight. We will have Ken Flo lead here. It's Marcin Tybura minus 110, Greg Hardy minus 110. We talked about Tybura a few months ago, made a noticeable physical transformation for the last fight, just was in the best shape of his life, and it produced a big win against Ben Rothwell on Fight Island. Now he'll put his three-fight winning streak on the line against Greg Hardy, the Prince of War, unbeaten in five of his last six, comes in following a big win over the crochet boss, Maurice Greene, on Halloween. Ken Flo. Big opportunity for Greg Hardy against Marcin Tybura. Who do you have?
Geez, you know, I think that if we saw the Marcin that fought his last time out, I think that he should be able to get the win. But Greg Hardy's a guy that, you know, say what you will about Greg, you know how he's going to show up. He's going to come up. He's going to come to fight. He's going to look for the knockout. I think if there's a guy who can get the knockout, it's probably Greg Hardy. I think Marcin is going to be better on the ground. I don't know if he's going to be able to put Greg Hardy on his back, though. And I think if it stays on the feet, I think if someone gets clipped, it's probably going to be Marcin. I do think that he looked way better in his last fight. I'm going to go with Greg here. I've picked against Greg pretty consistently, but I think he gets the win here. I think this would be a big win for him as well.
Ian, you know I got one of the first seats on the Greg Hardy bandwagon. What do you think about his chances here against the much-improved Marcin Tybura?
I was there with you. I'm unbuckling my seatbelt, and I'm getting on the Tybura train. I think that – no, you know what? Kenny's original point, I think, suits best. The last two times we've saw Marcin, he has been excellent, and I think he is one of the more improved fighters we've seen in the second half of this year. The cardio against Ben Rothwell, the volume that he was throwing, the pace, he fought really smart too. Rothwell was throwing so much and, you know, he kind of just rope-a-doped him a little bit. And then that ground game against Rothwell that we thought Ben would have the huge advantage. Tybura really, I thought, stepped up. And I think against Greg Hardy in that crochet boss fight, I don't think we saw anything different. I think we saw what we expect him to see, be the more powerful athlete, knocking a guy out. I also think Mo Green's a little overrated, as we've seen. I really think Tybura has an opportunity here to not take damage, not brawl, be smart, take this fight to the ground and just get on top and win. So I'm going to go that way.
Nicely played. And just so you know, if you see me looking at my phone during this segment, I'm only communicating with our producer, Cody. So don't think I'm cheating on you by looking at my phone. It's not like I got hot chicks fucking texting me. All right. Huge fight at bantamweight. Wait a sec. That fucking Brooklyn Wren texting me right now? Sorry. All right. Huge fight. I thought that was...
That's
huge
so
fight
good.
Of bantamweight between the former title challenger Marlon Moraes minus 155 here against Rob Font, who comes back at plus 135. So Moraes is trying to rally from what was a one-sided main event loss to Corey Sandhagen in October. Font, I think, Ian, in the best form of his career, has dealt with some injuries. He's won two straight over Sergio Pettis and Ricky Simone. But first fight of 2020 for Rob Font here. How do you handicap his chances against Magic Marlon Moraes?
This is a real interesting fight. Huge opportunity for Font, huge opportunity for Moraes to get back on track with a win, I think, in kind of a stylistically good matchup for him. For me, if Moraes doesn't win this fight, I really don't know where else he goes. I think he has to absolutely win this fight. I think if Rob Font loses, this is just a really solid experience for him fighting a top-notch guy he hasn't fought yet. So based on experience, level of competition, where these guys are at in their careers, I think Moraes is just going to be a little bit better everywhere. Again, I don't know how he's going to bounce back from that Sandhagen. I thought he looked pretty good in that first round against Corey. Even though Corey had the 10-9, I thought Moraes was in it. you know, until he wasn't. So I am going to go Morice here. I'm not overly confident, though. I like Rob Font's stand-up. I think his takedown defense has gotten way better. You know, like I said, this is kind of a now or never for Marlon, and I'm going to go that way.
Kenny, Morice Font, would you bet the fight? Who do you like?
You know, I don't hate Rob Font here in this fight. I think that, you know, it's kind of like when you broke the 4 minute mile for the first time, and then all of a sudden a bunch of people did it after that first person. I think that the blueprint is kind of out a little bit on Marlon Morice. Now, granted, this is a guy with a tremendous amount of physical skills. He's very fast. He's explosive. But I do think that it gives you a lot of confidence knowing that he may not be so strong if you pressure him. And he may not be a guy who is going to come at you with the same kind of vigor later on in the fight. So I think that Rob Font is good enough to get this into the third round where he could start to kind of turn the tables on Marlon a little bit and score. So I like Rob Font here. I'm going to go with Font. I think he gets the win.
Big opportunity for the New England Cartel's Rob Font. If he is going to be a UFC champion or get into that top five, this is one he's got to have. Are you calling timeout on me here?
Yeah, Kenny, you ran under a 4 minute mile?
I haven't. No.
I will tell you though.
I was going to say that's fucking impressive.
I'll tell you though, Ken Flo, and he'll be humble about this as usual, but sometimes to test himself, he tells the story of just going out in the street in Dover, Massachusetts, even when he's not in shape, and just punishing himself by running like a 5 minute, 40 second mile. Dude's insane, man. Professional athlete. Most famous person ever come out of Dover.
Bro, you always had good cardio. I was curious. I was like, fuck, is this guy running like 330 miles?
Soccer. We just run so much playing soccer. You know, it's crazy.
So yeah, Kenny's final UFC fight was 21 days before my first day as a UFC employee. But if I had filled out one of these Ken Flo fighter cards that I have on everybody else, mean streak would have absolutely been a like mean motherfucker in there. No doubt about it. All right. At welterweight, this fight has really resonated with fans, Ian Parker. Michel Pereira -125. Chaos Williams, easier to say, +105. Chaos 11-1, hasn't lost since his third pro fight. And he's been a highlight machine thus far in the UFC. Just ask Abdul Razak Al Hassan. Ian, your thoughts on Chaos Williams in the spot against Michel Pereira?
I'm not going to ask Al Hassan because A, he'll fuck me up, and B, he probably doesn't remember what happened. You know, like that was one of the most ferocious knockouts I think I've ever seen, just that straight down the middle that just ended his life. It was horrifying and beautiful at the same time. Pereira looked phenomenal in his last fight. He finally toned it down. He was very methodical. But I'm never going to pick against Chaos Williams till I find somebody that knocks him out. There's something about him that, in my opinion, is like the Marvin Vettori's and the Kevin Hollins and the Chimaevs. These guys are just fucking built different. They're built for war. They go in there. They literally, like Israel Adesanya, I will die in there. And these guys are just, the confidence is just like, we don't even need to get into Kevin Holland unless you let me do this later, because I'm still going insane over that whole situation. But I think we got another guy in Chaos Williams that's like that. I am surprised we're seeing two guys with this kind of hype and prospect star power meeting this early in their careers. Yeah. Usually we save this, you know, people talked about like the Weidman Rockhold fight waiting because they were the two guys in that division for a while. And you have two guys that are hurting people that are very unique. And we're doing this now, and we're doing this early in the career. I'm surprised there's even an underdog. I would have thought like even money across the board, because we also don't know a lot about Chaos. His fight ends so quick, but I'm not messing with him. He's violent. I like it. Give me Chaos. I want that Chaos.
I agree, though. Williams, Vettori, Holland, Adesanya, gangsters that I would not walk to the window to bet against. Chito Vera is another guy who I would actually put on that list, who we will get to shortly. I do have some disappointing news for you on Kevin Holland, Ian, before I get to Ken Flo's pick. He does not run his own Twitter.
I knew it. So, I fucking knew it.
I know you were hoping that your Remember the Show debut was going to be you versus Kevin Holland, but he doesn't run his own Twitter. He told us that. But we got to get Ken Flo's pick. What do you got?
That was so embarrassing. No, that was really. I've been saying a lot of shit too. He said something to Bilal, like,
no, he didn't. Duck? It was his manager.
No. Well, now I know. Oh. But I'm saying, Bilal said something to set it up, and the guy responded, "If it quacks like a duck, I'll smack the duck." So I said, "Oh, the trail, like Holla doesn't want this smoke." And he was responding to me. And I said to Bilal, "This is really weird if this is someone else running his account. And I've been getting catfished by Kevin Holland's manager. This is really strange and embarrassing." But
Canflo Michel Pareda won a bonus for a submission of Zelemi Medaev in September. Nice way, I thought, to distance himself from that Diego Sanchez disqualification. What are your thoughts on Pareda matching up with Chaos Williams?
I will say this. I agree with Ian. I'm a little surprised that they're putting both these guys at this stage of their careers. And I think for where they're at this stage of their careers, this is a very juicy fight, man. I think that Pereira, from what we've seen, because Chaos hasn't given us a whole lot, he knocks his guys out in under a minute. So I think that what we've seen, Pareda is a guy who it has more craft. He's a little trickier. When he has settled down, I think he's going to be a guy who's extremely difficult to beat. He's huge for the division. But does he have that Chaos Williams kind of power? Not from what we've seen. Not yet. So here's the thing. Chaos, he's going to find a way to touch him. He's going to find a way to touch him most likely at some point. I think if he does do that, he'll probably get the knockout. Pareda sometimes, if he doesn't stay disciplined, you know, make some big mistakes. And if you allow someone like Chaos Williams to touch you like that, it's going to be bad. I think Pareda, from what we've seen, is the better fighter as far as overall skills. He gives you more looks and all that stuff. But I guess I'm going to go with Chaos here as well.
I'm excited to be home on my couch sober as a judge, by the way, watching that one. All right. Co-main event. We'll need the round and the method of victory here, IP. Future Hall of Famer Jose Aldo, minus 165. Marlon Chito Vera, plus 145. A lot of fighters that I have talked to, at least four, lean Aldo here. I don't know how you go to the window and fade Chito Vera in this current form, Ian Parker. Should be riding a seven-fight winning streak if they didn't take away the Song Yadong one. Disciplined 24-7, 365. What do you think about Chito here against the King of Rio de Janeiro?
Yeah, I mean, Chito hasn't been as dominant as those other guys that we talked about, but he is built different also with that mentality, that war spirit. You know, it's hard with Aldo right now because, you know, he's looked pretty good in his last fight. You know, it looks like the weight cut's been working for him, that he's doing all right. But I think Chito is an underdog. I was a little surprised he was this heavy of an underdog. You know, not that heavy, but heavy enough. And I think that fight, doing what he did to O'Malley when everyone counted him out, except I think we picked Chito. You know, I just think this is such a huge opportunity for him, and I don't see him as one to waste it. And this style, we know this fight's not going to the ground. I'm going to ride the Chito bandwagon here. It's a three-round fight. I'm going to say decision. I don't love that prop, but I will go that way for the moment.
Kenny, Jose Aldo seems to have settled in at 135 pounds. Last fight, of course, for the vacant title against Piotr Jan. Some of our listeners may not know, Ken Flo went 25 minutes with Jose Aldo back in 2011. In this stretch, he's lost three straight after that big win over Renato Moicano. What do you think about Aldo here against the oncoming force Chito Vera?
This is an interesting fight, and if I were Chito Vera, this would be the time to fight someone like Jose Aldo, who I think that at this stage, he's got to be asking himself, you know, what division should I be in? Am I going to get another shot at the belt? Perhaps we can start to question what his motivation is like a little bit. I don't know, maybe. But I think the fact that Chito Vera is going to be a guy who's not going to go away easy. I think that his reach, his ability to be effective in the clinch could be a factor. I think Jose Aldo early on is going to be a handful. There's no question about it. The fact that this is a three-round fight, I also think favors Jose. I'm going to go with Aldo here. I am going to go with Aldo here. I think the fact that, you know, at least if he can start off really well, which I think can kind of affect Chito a little bit. Chito tends to get stronger as the fight goes on, but the fact that this isn't a 25-minute fight, I think hurts him a little bit. I think Jose does enough to get a decision win here.
All right, Ken Flo likes Jose Aldo, and we will go right back to you on the main event. This is a huge fight, boys, in the welterweight division. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, minus 125. Jeff Hands of Steel Neal, plus 105. Thompson, just a brutal matchup, I think, for almost anyone in this division. Many, though, Kenny, fancy Jeff Neal as a future UFC champion. Slight underdog price on him here. How do you handicap his chances in his first UFC main event?
I think Jeff Neal is Mr. Consistency. I think he's a guy who's always going to come up to, you know, show up to fight and come forward, and definitely has some decent power. And he's tough, man. He's got a good chin. But I don't think there's many people like Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. And finding a person who can move like him is going to be extremely difficult. I think Wonderboy, if he starts off well, I think it's going to be hard for someone like Jeff Neal to find his rhythm against someone like Wonderboy. I think Wonderboy will only get stronger. I think as the fight goes on, and I like Wonderboy. He's, for me, has been one of the best strikers I've ever seen perform inside the octagon. I think Wonderboy wins this most likely by knockout in round three.
Not a lot of people burning up Sean Shelby's phone looking to fight Jeff Neal. So he has to fight a guy in Wonderboy who I think, Ian, might be the toughest matchup for him in the top 10. Jeff Neal's won 7 in a row, I believe, dating to a regional loss to Kevin Holland. He's 5-0 in the UFC. So Thompson, championship experience, twice competed for the belt, 2016, 2017. He's only fought 4 times since. But the last win, Ian, against Vicente Luque at UFC 244 last November, I thought was just outstanding. So that's my lasting visual. But I love me some Saif Saud. I love me some Jeff Neal. I'm not wearing this shirt for any particular reason. But what do you think about the main event, and who do you have?
Yeah, listen, I love that team with Saif Saud over there, too. He's done a phenomenal job of a lot of these guys. I just think that for Jeff Neal, this is too much too soon. You know, I think people really, man, you want to talk about captain consistency. I think Wonderboy has continuously improved his overall game. Listen, if this guy can keep the fight standing, not too many guys can strike with him. You know, and he looks so, his power is so unassuming, and then he lands it against Luque. He looked phenomenal. People were questioning how that gap as well for him. You know, I just think for Jeff Neal, if he doesn't land that early knockout, he's in for a long night of getting picked apart. I don't know if Wonderboy finishes him. I don't know if Neal has the cardio to go 5 rounds. I'm very distracted right now. Kenny's laughing. It's like he's waiting on to say something. Did I fuck up someone's name that bad? Because you called Fajita Pereira before, and no one said shit. And I held that back. So go ahead. Just eat me up right now before I finish this fucking sentence. I'm going to take Wonderboy by decision, but I can't stop because you're laughing at me and Cody's flexing at me, and I don't know what's going on right now.
And I'm faded. I mean, I don't even know what's going on at this point.
Well,
I do know I shouldn't have worn my – I do know I shouldn't have worn my 4-7 MMA t-shirt on this of all shows, but it kind of is.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll see where that Wonder Boy, Jeff Neal line ends up on fight night. You can watch that show on ESPN Plus. Ian Parker, great job picking fights this year. You have just made your final selection in the 2020 main event challenge. Are you going to enjoy having a few weeks off? I know you watch the regional shows as well, but are you going to enjoy having a few weeks off and not having to dive into these picks, or do you think after a week you're going to be jonesing to get back on the horse?
I'm just going to sleep in your backyard and just ask to talk to you. So at least we pretend like we're doing the show. No, I love doing this. I love competing against Kenny. I love getting picked on like a little brother. It's a lot of fun. You know, look, there's a lot of podcasts and shows out there that do the same shit over and over again. They're enjoyable. I enjoy the chemistry that we all have. And I think it's a lot of fun. And I think the personalities here mesh really well. And the competition part kind of just brings a little extra funk to it, you know? And, you know, eventually Kenny will follow me organically. I'm hoping not to force him through punishment, but because I'm going to come up with something way worse than a fucking follow.
Yeah, I was going to say the punishment can't be a click.
Of course it's not going to be a fucking click. How long have you known me? A fucking click? All right. Get out
of
here,
Kenny.
Look
forward to that. I kind of look forward to you in my backyard. I'm more excited to just go see my kids after 2 weeks at this here Courtyard by Marriott. But we got to get on out of here. Our executive producer is Cody Merrow. Thank you to our guests, Ray Longo and Ian Parker. So next week, we will recap UFC Fight Night, Thompson versus Neal. We will also get you details on the 6th annual Anakin Florian Podcast Awards. Those will take place either Sunday, January 3rd or Monday, January 4th. But a lot of hardware from Ken Flo to be handed out. We'll get that to you in a couple weeks. With that, for Ken Flo and the rest, John Ames saying so long for now. Thanks for watching. Listen, tell your buddy, please subscribe, right? Hit that like button. I guess that helps too. Talk to you next Sunday. Yo, later.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.